Right, quarter past eight. So we talk Muslim schools now. Yesterday, many Muslim schools, alhamdulillah, took out posters, WhatsApp posters, banners, reflecting very good matric results. Reports indicated that some of the Muslim schools featured in the top independent or private schools in the country. So definitely, as I said in the last hour, something worthy of acknowledgement, worthy of pride for us as a Muslim community. Then towards the latter part of yesterday, there was an article written by Dr. Noran Davids from Stellenbosch University that went viral, where she was critical about the manner in which Muslim schools operate and the quality of the product that emerges in terms of the needs of broader society. We thought it's a good time to have a discussion on what Muslim schools have achieved and where to from here. We have two guests on the line. The first is Ibrahim Ansour. He's the executive headmaster at the Orient Islamic School. He's also the secretary of AMS in the region, as well as part of the National Alliance of Independent Muslim Schools. And our second guest, Abdullah Suji, who is the principal of Roshni Muslim School. Ibrahim and Abdullah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you both, and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Ibrahim, are you with us?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakallah for inviting us.
All right. Ibrahim, let me start with you, right? Briefly, if we go back, 30-odd years, what was the vision behind the establishment of Muslim schools in South Africa? Why were they established and what was the hope that they would accomplish?
Is Abdullah taking this? Or
no,
do you
Ibrahim,
want me to take
Ibrahim, this for you.
Okay. Well, I think one has to look at this in a historic context. The first Muslim schools, independent Muslim schools, were established pre the democratic dispensation. In other words, there were about four or five of these schools that were established. Mm. One was Linasia Muslim School, the other was As-Salam, Sirat al-Haq in KZN, and Nurul Islam in Johannesburg in Lens.
Yes.
Was one of the pioneer schools as well. So there were a handful of schools, and the children received an education which embraced both the worldly knowledge as well as spiritual knowledge. There was a fear that our children would be swamped by foreign ideologies and an alien cultural outlook. So the early pioneers of Islamic education in South Africa had this objective.
Right.
Subsequently, with the dawn of democracy in 1994 and the promulgation of the South African Schools Act, more and more communities felt that it was necessary to establish Muslim independent schools, just as there were a whole host of other faith-based independent schools. Remember that in those days, we had what was called a state-aided dispensation, which meant that religious schools, schools with a religious ethos, could operate under the state, and they had certain rights, such as teaching their particular religious beliefs during the course of the school day. But with the promulgation of the South African Schools Act, that fell away, and there were only two types of schools, either independent or private or state. And if you opted for the state dispensation, then there was no focus on religion at all.
Okay.
So since that time, Muslim independent schools have mushroomed, and now I think we have about 90 throughout the country.
In light of that, Abdullah, would you say that to a large extent we've achieved the objective for which Muslim schools were established, or where have we fallen short?
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for the question, Brother Molana. I think we have, in many ways, achieved our objectives in many characteristic fashions. We have met with the demands of the globalization of the world, where we have kept our ethos and made people understand the magnificence of Islam within a multicultural society. Mm-hmm. Because our schools also have children and teachers and staff who are not Muslim. And the misnomer out there that our schools only have Muslims and are only Indian in cultural context, it's also a fallacy. Our schools have now a range of pupils of various ethnicities, although being Muslim, now from other African countries. So in keeping with the ethos of the school's mission and vision based on Islam, in many characteristic ways, as I said, we have achieved it. And there's a lot more to achieve because our schools, like other faith-based schools, are challenging the morality standards that have come through with globalization, mm-hmm. the like of the LGBTQ movement. And our faith-based schools allows us to look at that. And it is also imperative to understand that the non-Muslims within our school, especially the children, are not forced to attend the assembly where the Quran is being recited. Strange but true, the non-Muslims who come into our school and do our Islamic studies, for example, actually do better in some ways than our own children who are Muslim. So the essence of da'wah, the essence of showcasing Islam in a practical way, I think that has been achieved. And there's so much more still to achieve. And what is primary to me and for me, and I think Ibrahim would agree, is that our schools are not, we are not pluralistic as the article contends. You know, nor do we polarize one over the other. We try to have this inclusivity very much like all schools there, save the fact that we keep to an ethos and we allow our children to have the teaching of Islam to them, even if it is in the form of dahib that we know. Jazakallah, Maulana.
Before we go to the article, right, Ibrahim, I want your thoughts on matric results and what does that say about the state of Muslim schools, the achievement of Muslim schools. I mean, on the face of it, Muslim schools have done very well, being listed amongst the top schools or private schools in the country. But there's also another angle that people bring to the fore. Do we as Muslim schools sometimes overplay or overemphasize matric results, Ibrahim?
No, there's no doubt about it. Maulana, the fact of the matter is that the barometer by which independent schools are judged is actually the quality of the matric results. Obviously, you know, from an educational perspective, that is not our main focus. As Islamic schools in particular, all our schools are focused on developing the holistic child to make sure that the child has a well-rounded character, steeped and based on the Islamic philosophy. But it's very difficult to sell this to parents. You must also understand that parents want the best for their children, and a good matric pass is what they are sending their children to schools for. So we try to balance the two. You know, there are some schools, for example, that might have a very strict admission criteria. They will accept only the cream of the crop. And there are other schools that have children that enter their schools in grade R and grade double R, and we carry them through right up to matric. So we've got to deal with the crop we have. But the answer to the question is that this is a worldwide phenomenon. Parents clearly want the best for their children, and the passport to a good tertiary education is a good matric pass, especially in the kind of highly competitive environment in which our children are currently find themselves in South Africa. But I take the point, and we try very hard at our schools to ensure that there is a balance between the academic as well as the holistic character development in our schools.
Yeah, well, I suppose also that matric results are tangible, right? You can put it out there, 100% pass, so many bachelor, so many distinctions. Whereas when it comes to the character development, it's not something that you can actually put in the form of stats. It's something which will reflect once those students go into broader society and their values and their approach and attitude comes to the fore. Anyway, moving to the article itself, Abdullah, one of the arguments that Dr. Nuran makes is that in Muslim schools, the teaching and learning is largely constructed along dichotomy lines. You've got the teacher as the authority and the learner as a passive recipient. And she argues there's too much of reliance on memorization and rote learning, not enough attention on critical thinking and debate. I seem to get the indication that she wants Muslim schools to be more like a university, where there's, you know, open discussion and debate and lateral thinking and all of that kind of things. It's a bit of a challenge when you've got your Islamic subjects because that's revealed, it's cast in stone. But what's the nature of learning when it comes to secular subjects? Is it as Dr. Nuran articulates on this point in her article, Abdullah?
Firstly, I'm surprised as a lecturer writing a research article, she does not cite the schools which she visited to make such an important comment, because any research article must be backed up by evidence of research. And how many schools did she find that in? In state schools, the very same thing she talks about, you find that dichotomous approach prevailing. In the Muslim schools, by and large, yes, there is a lecture approach in many lessons. However, given our small numbers, I can tell you there's a lot of discussion and a lot of communication between the child and the teacher. And to cite an example, in Islamic studies, in fiqh, an alim in our school has this very intense discussions about the fiqh related to the latest global trends that are happening in the world. Just to put it out there, in America, meat is now being cultured outside the, you can buy cultured meat. That means a cow hasn't been born, so to speak, the cultured meat. Now they're asking, Molana, is that halal or haram? Now, isn't that an indication that the child is thinking? Correct. And then our schools also take part in many Olympiads, and there is that discussion. We have many sessions of life goal planning in our schools where you take the children out of the classroom and they're with the principal or someone in discussion. Like the other schools out there, our children are involved in various competitions and the likes. And it's not only within Muslim schools. Our children compete with schools that are non-Muslim state schools. We have joint ventures with them in various degrees, however. So the lecture mode is also synonymous with all schools in South Africa, even the top elite schools that you find there. So it's a very debatable point. Furthermore, I would like to end off by saying that our schools in the main rely on rote learning where it is necessary, because the curriculum is designed like that. Yeah. The CAPS curriculum is content heavy. How else do you do it? Our schools have embraced technology using Google Classroom and other platforms where we actually augment and modify lessons and redefine lessons, you know, to make lessons more interesting. So when the child goes home, whatever the teacher said, there's a video content about it, or there's a questionnaire about it that gets feedback. So I don't know where she gets his comments from, you know. I'm quite surprised in this age a generalized comment is made when schools were not visited. She makes the comment of the Association of Muslim Schools in an article, but I did not find any correspondence from her to the association. And Ibrahim is the chair as well, of NAISA, that we can attend to these matters. Yeah. So I think there's a lot, the article leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, perhaps on that point, EMS should look at, writing a counter perspective on the arguments raised by Dr. Nuran. But Ibrahim, coming back to you, right, the one point she makes, and I alluded to this earlier on, is that she feels that Muslim schools are too insular, and that students that graduate from Muslim schools cannot meet the demands of a pluralist and diverse society. She also says that black Muslims continue to be marginalized. Others argue that the demographics in Muslim schools kind of reflect the demographics of Muslims in the country. What are your thoughts on those arguments, Brian?
Well, the first issue relating to... I just want to endorse what Brother Abdullah said. Hmm. I find that one of our arguments is very parochial when she talks of Malay and Indian. Certainly, in the rest of South Africa, we don't have that dichotomy. It may perhaps be in the Cape. But having said that, there are certain points that she makes that are worth considering. I mean, we constantly look at how we can ensure that our schools embrace all societies and become pluralistic in their nature. But I just want to remind us, that AMS had a conference in 2019 on Islamic pedagogy. So as an association, we are in fact engaged in looking at our practice in the classroom. And we had some eminent professors from the Islamic University in Australia, from the faculty of the University of South Australia last year, or in 2019, and they were prominent academics whose research is based on empirical evidence. They have done extensive research in Islamic schools, not only in Australia, but internationally. But we take the point, we certainly are going to respond to Dr. David's article. At the same time, we take the point that there's a lot of work we still have to do to try to make our schools more open, in a sense, and to look at our methodologies as being more moving away from the traditional. I think the conference that we had highlighted the need to open up our minds in terms of methodology. And I can tell you that in most Islamic schools, we have an Islamic forum, which AMS has, and they are constantly looking at changing that old paradigm of the teacher being the guru, and then the children being recipients. There is a great deal of thinking and implementation of new and exciting methodologies compared to the old system. So to summarize, we take some of the points that have been made, but at the same time, we would like to see more research done among Islamic schools in South Africa before we arrive at any conclusion.
Abdullah, finally, I mean, we're out of time, so very quickly, Ibrahim has indicated on some of the points where he feels Muslim schools need to look to improve going forward. In your opinion, what should be the vision for the next 20 years for Muslim schools in South Africa?
I think the vision for the next 20 years is to become much more dynamic in our approach to teaching. It must become more dynamic in our inclusivity, which is a point of debate as well, because the demographics of our country are changing with the Muslims from Africa coming in, and also our local brothers who are here and sisters who are also coming in. So Vision 20 ahead must mean that Islamic schools must be the beacon of hope for humanity to establish a moral grounding, and obviously be that institution that doesn't marginalize but actually grows, because Islam is for all, you know. We don't discriminate, because our schools at the moment have such a huge employment of non-Muslim teachers in the school who are doing a remarkable job, and they're passing their values to us as well and to our children. And similarly, they're educating our children on certain cultures and values to which they must inculcate. So there's a lot to do, and I concur with my brother Ibrahim on what he said. But be that as it may, Maulana, we are doing research. I mean, we are working on matters on a year-on-year basis, because we, as EMS, we are non-profitable. We have least amount of funds. But I think we're doing a great job in terms of trying our best to put ourselves out there as beacons of hope for humanity at large, not only for Indian Muslims or so on and so forth. So thank you so much. Jazakallah.
Barakallah feekum to both of you, Ibrahim Ansour and Abdullah Suji. We really appreciate your time. Jazakumullah. That was Ibrahim Ansour. He is with Orient Islamic School. He's the executive headmaster. He's also the secretary general of NAISA, the National Alliance of Independent Schools Associations. He's with EMS. And Abdullah Suji, the principal of Roshni Muslim School, talking about the state of Muslim schools and also responding to some of the arguments made by Dr. Noran Davids in an article of hers that went viral yesterday, where she's critical of the state of Muslim schools.